Hi, everybody. We want to thank our sponsor, Legion M. They are a wonderful company. We love working with them. You can go to their website, Legion M. They're also on all the various socials. They do really fun meetups. You can talk to directors. You can become a part of the projects they choose. They even have a program right now where you can help them find great movies to support. So go to their website to learn more. We also want to remind you that we have a Patreon that we call Maltreon. You can join us. We have $3, $5, $10, $20 options. You can get newsletters from my dad, all kinds of neat stuff behind the scenes. Hang out with us, learn about who our guests are before anybody else, and listen to the podcast before anybody else. Go to patreon.com/maltononmovies for more information.
That's patreon.com/maltononmovies.
Hi, everybody. I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
You're listening to Maltin on Movies, and our guest today is no stranger to any of you. She's been acting for a long time and doing wonderful work on screen, and now she is directing as well. Welcome, Kira Sedgwick. Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much.
And you have a new movie called Space Oddity. I love that play on words. It puts you in the same paragraph as Stanley Kubrick, which
that's great.
Incidentally, in the year 2023, a film was made called Space Oddity, which this will always be part of the chronicle of history.
I love it. Yes, please. More of that.
I just want to say, the best compliment I can give you, you know, you're a great actress. That's fine. You know that part. I got to meet your daughter last year at the Independent Spirit Awards, and she might be one of the nicest, warmest humans I have ever encountered. What an absolutely lovely human being. So good job, Mom.
Thank you. I appreciate that so much.
True. She's so, so kind. And everybody was really taken by her. Everybody else working was just really taken by her. She was so, so sweet. And, you know, that is not always the case, as we know, especially growing up with not just one, but two parents who are in the industry, which is a scary thing to do.
Yes.
And to choose the career path that she's chosen and really shown just how talented she is. I was so happy to meet her and just have her be that kind of a person.
Thank you. That's lovely. Thanks. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
At what point in your action career did you know or intuit that you wanted to direct?
You know, I didn't know until I was 50 and directing for the first time. You know, I think about why I never thought of it. And I think that there's a lot of reasons for that. You know, I think that as women, we get told, you know, to only have a certain piece of the pie. You should really only want a certain piece of the business, you know, which is weird though, because I produced by the time I started producing at 25. So like that doesn't really track, but it kind of does. I think there's a way in which you have to take charge that is different as a director. And also you have to come with a great deal of confidence. And while I had confidence in directing, I think in a way, because I had so much confidence in acting, I wanted the same level of certainty and confidence right away, you know, and I just didn't have it until the right thing came along. And it was actually something I'd been trying to produce as a feature for 10 years. And I did it. It's called Story of a Girl. And I did it for Lifetime. And it wasn't until I had blocked my first scene and sent the actors back to the makeup trailer that I went, oh, I know exactly what I'm doing. I know exactly, you know, I had like months of prep and frankly, 10 years of prep. And I really was like, oh my God, I don't know. And I think that it's wonderful to have that self-doubt. I don't think men experience that as often as women do. So I think that, and it is something that you really have to fight against as a director, because you have to know, you have to at least pretend you have the answer to everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I knew I would be really good at working with the actors, but sure. What I didn't know was that I would be good seeing it in my, you know, picturing it and picking shots and having a visual style, you know, and I really did. I had really strong opinions about coverage and how we would shoot something and what I wanted to evoke from the way that I shot it emotionally, you know, what I wanted to invoke visually, what frame will support what's going on emotionally in the scene, and also the bigger picture of the themes of the movie, you know? Yeah. Those are the kinds of things that you don't know you know until you go, oh yeah, I know.
Yeah. And how different is directing TV to film?
I've only ever directed a TV show that wasn't mine, right? So sure. I've never done a pilot. I've only ever done somebody else's vision. And so when you're coming in as an episodic director, which I love doing, by the way, I really have no problem with it at all. I love it. You get to use all their toys and yep. They have money than you will ever have. And, right. And so I really like it, but it's their cast. Mm-hmm. It's their crew, you know, it's their vision. And you are there to carry on those marching orders, you know? And while I always feel like I can put my own stamp on whatever I'm directing, even though it's not mine, it's still not mine, you mm-hmm. know? Yeah. So and as a film director, you have, it's all yours and it's yours. I mean, you know, you have the script that's not mine, but I then have, you know, full reign over everything. Right. 'Cause I've never done a studio movie. So I have full reign.
That's it. This is also, you know, you mentioned about producing. It's funny because the title of producer has sort of, to people who don't know what it actually is, sort of sounds like a joke because you go, oh, you call someone a producer. If you want to say thank you, you call someone a producer. And or executive producer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, God.
And it's funny because obviously more and more now when you watch TV shows, and this has been happening for years, you see the leads tend to be executive producer on a show, yeah. Which is great. Now, in some cases, that's part of the contract. And they're yeah. not really doing a whole heap, but that's part of the contract. Then yeah. there is a real producer.
Yeah.
Where you are the person orchestrating 90% of what's happening. Right. The only thing you're not doing is directing.
Right.
Because you're making sure that everything is there. You're yeah. making sure that whatever anyone needs, they get, figuring out money. It's such a difficult job and occasionally thankless.
Yes.
But vital.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting good at that, getting good at that. I mean, it's a skill. It really is a skill.
Right.
And nobody, and like you say, unless it's a big move, most of us never have money, you know, right. You never really have what you need. So you're just figuring it out. And that's, as I say, it's a skill and it's something that, I think if people got to see the real side of it would be overwhelmed.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. You
know, the organization exactly. it requires.
Yeah.
You know, to do all of it.
Right. Right.
You obviously have that skill set.
You know, I think I'm also, I have that skill set to a degree, but I'm also, I know what I don't know. Sure. And so I know to hire better people than me to do things, you know what sure. I mean? So I think there's a certain amount of, and also a certain amount of understanding as you like grew up and you hire all the department heads that you understand, you have a sense of like the whole piece all the yes. time, the chemistry that possibly, hopefully will, and the alchemy of like, choosing that crew and that group.
Yeah. Now, for many, many years, it isn't true anymore. For many years, TV was viewed as sort of the stepchild of the movie yeah. world.
Yeah.
It's completely turned around.
Yeah, but, in every way.
But from the very beginning, TV's been good to you.
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
It's been good for me. Very good to me. I started out on a soap opera when I was 16. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot doing that soap opera. And then I think I did a couple of like guest starring things, but then The Closer happened and that was extraordinary. You know, The Closer happened for me when I was 40. Yeah. And, you know, I think that was a time when, you know, one could have a, you know, less opportunity, and I had more opportunity. And so, and it was an extraordinary part.
Oh, such
really fun.
Such a good my mom and I were devoted.
Yes,
devoted.
Your two most loyal, rabid fans.
That's my dad. My dad doesn't get to watch much TV because he's always watching movies. My mom and I
always enjoyed it when I saw it, but they were glued.
It was so good.
Thank you.
It was so good. And you and your character and your relationship to your parents and everything about it, it was just so layered and well-written. And, you know, we talked to so many different people, and it's always interesting hearing about their experience on what we lovingly call procedurals.
Yeah.
But when you can find something that's more than that, and it's more than just you go to court and you do this thing and you fight this thing and you go to this crime and you handle it. It's like, and those are bread and butter for everyone. But to find something that's well written and funny and all the rest of it is, it's a unicorn,
I really felt that way. I mean, I knew that I'd been offered TV over the years, like a ongoing series, and nothing really killed me. And this was very special. But for the first 3 or 4 months, my manager was talking about, I was like, don't even send it because it shoots in LA. Cause she said it shoots in LA. And I had, young kids, and I was like, forget it. I can't do it. And then she sent it, and that was the end of it. And then I fell in love with it. And, what she said was, it's like an American Prime Suspect. And I was like, okay, send it, And it was great. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I loved every minute of it. And I really, truly think they would have gone on for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
But it was time, it was time to go on and do something else, and better to, leave early than stay too long,
This is where the Brits, I think, have it right. Though on occasion, I wish they'd do more, because their stuff often ends too early.
That proves the point, though.
But yeah.
You leave the audience wanting more.
No,
that's always my jam. Leave the audience wanting more. Yeah.
Now, so did you all move out, or did you just commute?
No, I commuted. I mean, I didn't.
We should really explain. You live in Connecticut.
Live in New York. I lived in New York at the time. I have a place. We were married in Connecticut. We have a place there. But I was 6 months out of the year in LA.
Wow.
And they would come out every other weekend. Travis was older. Sosie was 12, and I missed a lot. They have, they're good, they're okay, but like, I miss stuff, and there's definitely sacrifice in that for sure.
Of course.
You probably had similar experience. So when when pagers became a thing, Entertainment Tonight gave my dad a pager, this giant clunky object.
Right.
I remember him going to school events and having this big old thing on his hip, because God forbid something happened and E.T. needed to get a hold of him.
Oh my God.
I think had I not grown up in L.A., that would have been weird.
Right.
Growing up, all the other parents had similar situations. But it's true. It's such a, it's a strange world that we all live in.
It is.
But also, we make it work.
Yeah.
And you're also, you and my parents have something in common. You're happily married and only one time. My mom says that she is my dad's trophy wife, and he's her first husband. So you have a similar situation.
We just celebrated 48 years.
48 years of marriage.
Oh my God.
Nuts, amazing. Right?
That's so great. That's so great.
And you got, what are you guys coming up on?
35.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, 35.
As we like to say, five of the happiest years of your life. No, that's amazing. And in Hollywood, we say that's about a million years.
Yeah.
And you're both artists, which is not easy.
Yeah.
And you're working, which is not easy.
Yeah.
Because it means you have to figure all of that out, and you've got two kids.
Yeah. Yeah. Our kids are grown.
Yeah.
But we feel lucky to be in the same business. I think it's really, we really understand what it's like. We understand the creativity of you know, you're having a really intense conversation with your spouse and they knock on the trailer door and you're like, gotta go, you know?
Yeah.
It's something that normal people probably wouldn't really understand, you know?
Yeah.
I want to ask about some women in particular that you worked with over the years. You did more, your fair share of made for TV movies.
Yeah.
Over the years. And I was looking over the list and you got to work with Maureen Stapleton.
I did.
Memories?
I remember her being really warm to me and did not suffer fools.
No.
And was a great actress and cared incredibly deeply about what she was doing and brought her all. And, you know, I think I was at a time in my, I was pregnant with Sosie on that one. And you know, I loved, she was a great role model because she was like, when she got tired, she's like, I'm tired. I can't wrap this up. Like, I'm tired. And I was like, God, you're allowed to ask for that. You're allowed to say that, you know?
Yeah.
I think that was something I learned from her. And, you know, she was just so incredibly prepared and wonderful.
That was on Miss Rose White.
Yeah.
1992. And then Jenna Rollins.
What?
Jenna Rollins.
Oh, Jenna Rollins. Oh, my God. I mean, you know, she's just incredible. She is such a powerhouse of an actor and such
a force
person, a real force, but like so gentle and, you know, sensitive, you know, like really, really sensitive and great. I mean, she was so lovely to me, you know. I think that, you know, I came to it, as you said, like knowing and respecting the craft, knowing and respecting great acting. You know, I watched old movies. Those were the movies that I used to watch, you know. I mean, all the, you know, from movies in the 40s to up until, you know, when I started. And you know, Jenna Rollins played a huge part in that, as did Maureen Stapleton. So I think that, you know, they could probably tell that I appreciated them, you know, even though I was a young little freaking putz, you know.
But respect, I mean, it is that though, isn't it? Respect. People appreciate respect.
Definitely. Everyone wants to be treated well and everybody wants to be seen, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that also I worked with these actors when they were sort of like older.
Right.
And were maybe feeling a little invisible, you know. And I would be like, I remember you in this and I remember you in that. And they, you know, it'd be nice. I mean, it's nice.
Yeah.
And you got to work with both Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward.
That's right.
On Mr. and Mrs. Bridge.
Yes.
Talk about your impressions of them.
I mean, it was incredible. I remember one of the first things that happened was that they wanted to rehearse with us. James Ivory wanted to rehearse with us. And so we went to the Actors Studio in New York. And there's a scene where Paul and I are doing the balcony scene in Romeo and Juliet.
Wow.
And he was downstairs at the stage area and I was up in the mezzanine in this like tiny little black box theater where they used to have all the classes back in the 50s. I mean, it was like the history coming off the walls. And I was up there and he was reading, you know, Romeo and I'm spouting Juliet. And I'm like, it doesn't get better than this. Like, I could die right now.
That is, you know?
Wow.
Surreal.
I know, it was so unbelievable. And then he made me a hamburger one time. You know, he and Joanne were very generous and they always wanted to feed people. And, you know, when we were shooting in Virginia, they would, you know, invite you over for Sunday, you know. I was breastfeeding my son Travis on that set.
Oh my God.
And I went over there for lunch on a Sunday and he handed me he said, do you want a beer? And I said, oh no, I'm breastfeeding. I'm breastfeeding and I need my brain cells. One had nothing to do with the other, but
right.
I said, no, I need my brain cells. And he goes, kid, you got a lot of brain cells. Here, have a beer. It's very funny. No, but he also was just like, he was the person that said to me, you never stop worrying about your kids.
Yeah.
And honestly, I weirdly thought I think that I hadn't thought of that before I had kids.
Yeah.
Until he said that to me and I went, what? What? Like, I figured I'd be 18. They'd be 18 and I'd be like, mazel, you know, enjoy.
Yeah.
Good. Like, you're going to be fine. But never.
No.
I mean, stop worrying about him and them. And his little eyes started to get all misty, his beautiful blue eyes. I mean, it was like, you could have knocked me over. Like, I felt like I'd been, you know, driven over by a Mack truck when he said that, truly. And I had this 2-month-old and I was like, what do you mean?
You know? Oh.
Man.
That, as I say, being a parent and working.
Yeah.
Both of you working.
Yeah.
That's just such a, it's a lot to take on.
It is.
And it's a lot to handle. And even something like breastfeeding while you're working, meaning
yeah, that right,
your body exactly. is being used while yeah. you're working. It's a lot to do to yourself. I mean, you know, but yeah. at the same time, you have a beautiful family.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's worth it. But
yeah.
my, oh my, I do think about that. Melanie Lynskey last year at Critics' Choice Awards said in her acceptance speech, she thanked her nanny because she said, I couldn't do the work I do if I didn't know that my daughter was in such good hands and being loved and taken care of. And I don't think I've ever heard someone say that.
Yeah.
And it was so, I mean, Melanie Lynskey's phenomenal, but it was just so special the way she said that. And I think every parent and every potential parent went, oh, wow.
Totally.
Oh, wow. That's a really important thing. And to be honest about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And we're lucky enough to be able to work and have help. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, can't work because they can't get help.
That's
right.
it.
Right.
Well, I say this all the time. My mom is the only reason that we're able to do a show because my husband works out in the world. And my mom watches my daughter so my dad and I can work. If it wasn't for my mom, you know, we're very, very lucky. It's a fortunate thing to have someone who can take care of your kid and love them the way you love them.
Yes.
You know, it's very, very, very lucky.
There's a film you made that I want to bring up. I found it very inspiring and nourishing. It's Rebecca Miller's Personal Velocity.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought that was just a terrific little indie film with three episodes, gave three talented actresses something to chew on.
Totally. I totally agree. I was so happy when I heard that they wanted me for that part, when Rebecca met with me and I read it and I thought, gosh, this is so great, because it was at a time where people didn't really see me like that, you know, sort of this, you know, very complicated woman who also kind of used her sexuality in a really bold, great way, but also was in a domestic violent relationship. It was so honest about domestic violence and how sometimes you love people that hit you. And it was, I mean, first of all, the piece itself was such a celebration of womanhood, you know, and every different shape and size of woman. And Parker Posey was amazing. And Fairuza Balk, amazing. And I really loved playing a character that didn't talk a lot, you know, but like through her eyes and her reactions, you saw a lot. I love the way she takes her power back in her hands at the end, like in a sexual way that was like very like, probably affronting for some people in the audience. I love that you like that, Leonard. I felt it was also $100,000 with that movie. That was $100,000 movie. It was when I think it was IFP, independent film producers or whatever, were they were starting this new thing called digital. And they gave everyone, and Ellen Curris, who's a brilliant cinematographer who went on to do Eternal, you know, whatever, the Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine.
Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and blah, 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 and everything. She was the cinematographer, and it was amazing. There's little cameras, you know, and she could be, and Ellen could be way in the other room getting this, you know, and And she was so excited about the new technology and, you know, and it was amazing. And it won Sundance that year. Mm-hmm. And then I learned a very important lesson, which is just because you win Sundance doesn't mean anybody actually is going to go see your movie. So I love that you loved it. And it was beloved by the critics as well. It should have been, but you know, it was an indie. It was a real true, scrappy, weird indie with like weird characters, you know, especially women who quite were a little bit like, you know, ahead of their time, I think, in a way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's still there to be discovered. And I hope more people do. There's so many films that I want to ask you about.
Yeah.
Secondhand Lions.
Yes.
It's a sweet film.
I love that movie.
A very sweet film that at the time was a showcase for Haley Joel Osment coming off of The Sixth Sense. But there are Michael Caine and Robert Duvall.
Yep.
And there are Michael Caine and Robert Duvall.
Killing it. Yes.
Killing it. Exactly. Playing older than they actually were.
Right. I forgot about that. That was amazing. I mean, I loved doing that movie. Again, great part. Not one I'd really been asked to do before, you know. A really, truly bad mother who wants to play that. I do. And playing against type. And it was really fun. And I love, you know, again, those are like older, more established actors. And, you know, I love doing that and, you know, get to take some of their, you know, their light beam shines on me and I look better. Mm-hmm. They were hilarious and really fun to work with. I had worked with, I think, Bobby Duvall on Something to Talk About. He was my dad. And I feel like I worked with him one other time. I feel like I've worked with him three times. But anyway, he is a pisser and, you know, a scenery chewer. And, you know, this movie was no different. And then Michael Caine is amazing, even though he insisted on calling me Kyra.
Sure.
Even though his wife's name is Shakira, which I really spent a lot of time trying to drill him on that one. But there's something about the Brits. They see the Y and they say Kyra. But anyway, but it was really fun. I think we were shot somewhere in Georgia. I can't remember. I remember it was really hot. And Haley was amazing. I mean, he's gotten to be such a great actor now. You know, he's like even better, you know, he's got sort of like had a niche now in like the funny guy.
A young character actor.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas like at the time it was like, cry. I mean, that's really what they wanted him to do, you know, the whole time.
I mean, that's the amazing thing, of course, about having these longer careers is that there's all of these different experiences and adventures and different people that you work with. And then as I say, the fact that you have these stories of your kids and going, oh my God, I was breastfeeding during that movie or I was pregnant during that movie. Yeah. I always think it has to be kind of wild to watch yourself through so many years.
Yeah. You know? To watch age. Yes.
Not always enjoyable.
No, I mean, it is hard to see that. That is hard. And they've got, you know, they've got pictures of you looking better. But I think that I'm so grateful for the career I've had. It's been such an incredible journey. And I've worked with so many amazing people. And it is funny to, that is how we, Kevin and I both, like, map out our lives. I remember. Oh, yeah, I was pregnant with, you know, and that speaks to how all consuming the job is, right? Yeah. I mean, it really is because it's something that you love, but it's also something that you need to do.
Yeah.
Because that's how you make your money.
Yeah.
But it is utterly all consuming. So it's like you in some weird way fit in life, you know, in between movies and TV. But I also think that, you know, to speak to that a little bit is that it's a great job when you're not working. I mean, it's a great thing for a parent to be available 24/7 when they're not working, you know?
Yeah.
So there's also that side of it too.
Right.
What's it like working with your family?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, the first movie I did, I hired Sosi to be in. She played a smaller part, not the lead. And she's incredible. And
yes,
as you said, she is incredible. And, you know, it is such a huge part of their life, you know, that they kind of, the fact that they've been incorporated into it makes a lot of sense and feels right.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it feels right for them too. Travis is a musician and has been forever from the time he's 12. Oh my God, the dog I love. Yes.
I keep working at home, right?
Sorry, yes.
Dogs, exactly. We got babies.
Yes, exactly. I'm coughing. He actually asked me if he could read my first movie, Story of a Girl. And he said, you know, and he'd never composed before. And he said, you know, let me, I said, sure, you can read it. I didn't know why I wanted to read it. And then he read it and was like, you know, I have some things in my head, you know, I have some ideas for score. I'll just pitch it to you and see if you like it. And I was like, oh God, how's this going to go?
This is scary. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say no, like no way, you know? And then he wrote something and it was beautiful. And then I used it for the temp track because I didn't have to use any other temp track. He gave us a bunch of cues and I thought, you know what, let's do this. And he was great at it. And then he did a short that I directed and it was a totally different thing, much more comedic. And then when this came along, it was just my go-to, you know, he worked with another composer, Scott Hendrick, and they both did an incredible job. And, and Kevin is, you know, Kevin, and he's amazing. And,
well, we should just interrupt for a moment.
You don't know.
He is very, he is very good in Space Oddity. He's not only good, he's well cast.
Yeah.
He's believable as this guy who, suffered a loss and clings to his remaining son and daughter and believes in the land. And this could be corny in other people's hands if badly done. He's so genuine. He's really, really good.
Thank you.
But you knew that.
Yeah. I think it was one of the reasons why I wanted to hire him is because it is a part that he doesn't often get to play.
Sure.
You know, and he's such an extraordinary actor and he, you know, he's known as like the flashy character guy and he is gentle and scared in this and very vulnerable and fighting for, you know, the planet. He's sort of that, he is the embodiment of that in the movie. And he was just extraordinary. And I was grateful. He said, yes, you know, and he's great at taking direction, even for his wife, you know, and he's so lovely on set. You know, I think when you have someone, you know, who's so famous on set, I think everyone takes their cue from him and he's, you know, there isn't any person that Kevin has worked with that doesn't just sing his praises. He's lovely to crew. He's lovely to cast. He's all about the work, you know? So that was a really good influence on the youngins, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that could be crucial, I gather, on any set.
For sure. On any set. And especially when we have no money and no time, no trailer, you know, and nobody else was allowed to complain because Kevin Bacon wasn't complaining.
That's it. But that's it, isn't it? Is you have, but that's the thing. People need the education.
Yeah.
This is true in every job. You need someone to look to and say, see, if so-and-so can do it, then everybody else can. And when you have those kinds of actors or director, anything, and you're not being a diva, he's not being a diva, well, then what's your excuse?
Yes, exactly.
You know, I have to, I work Independent Spirit Awards every year. Your husband was there this year. He decided to stay backstage the entire time.
Oh, yeah.
And all I kept hearing in my walkie was, Kevin Bacon's here, you guys. Guys, Kevin Bacon just keeps walking back and forth. He was watching the monitors. He was hanging out by the directors. It was so funny
That is funny.
Just, and then I would run to the other side and I'd see him like, is that Kevin? Why is Kevin Bacon standing there? It was the funniest thing to just keep hearing it from everybody because everybody knows who he is. So I was right. Just like, is Kevin Bacon standing by the, why does he act there? It was very, very funny. He was very sweet to everybody and lovely and nobody wanted to bother him, of course, but it was just hilarious to have everybody having the same moment of like a ghost of Kevin Bacon just appearing behind them as they're schlepping some cords across. Yeah.
Right.
Very funny.
I want to ask you a favor, see if you're willing to do this. Can you take us back in time? You're on a set with Tom Cruise being directed by Oliver Stone in a movie called Born on the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what, where you were in your life, in your career, and what that felt like.
Well, I was pregnant with Travis.
Right, there we go.
I was not pregnant when I got the job, but then I soon became pregnant. I was told about the job. I met with Oliver, and we had a great meeting. And I figured, oh, I'll have to audition with Tom or something.
Yeah.
I got a call. I was in the shower. I got a call. You know, that was back the time when you had voice machines or whatever.
Right.
Got out of the shower. Listen to my message machine. You know, it's my manager. Call me right away. And I remember I was wrapped in a towel and she was like, you got the Tom Cruise Born the 4th of July, Oliver Stone movie. I was like, what are you saying? I can't believe it. You know, I mean, it was like incredible because, you know, it was a really big break for me.
Yeah.
I had been working, but, you know, not in any big major feature, you know, and with such a big movie star, you know, and he was and still is an extraordinarily big movie star.
Yes.
So I knew it was a break. It felt like a break and I loved working on it. I loved working with Tom. He's such an incredibly hard worker. It's true what they say that he's the hardest working man in Hollywood. And he cared so much about this part, of course, playing a real person.
Right.
About the Vietnam War, you know, about someone who got his legs, you know, became a quadriplegic. I mean, he was really extraordinary in the part. And very generous. And Oliver was great. I know people have had, you know, find him tough. I don't mind tough myself.
Yeah.
Because I'm a little tough too. So I can, you know, in the sense that I can take.
Yes.
I can take it when someone is, you know, consumed with the job and not able to caretake me. I don't need to be caretaked. And plus the great thing about Oliver is that he would sort of tease you. And if you teased him back, you were golden. You know what I mean? Like, no problem. He wasn't going to mess with you, you know? And it was great. I loved being able to play the young ingenue who is like, couldn't be more Doris Day, you know, like innocent. And then see her, you know, 4 years later and she's a adamant, you know, pacifist and fighting against the war and, you know, getting her hands dirty and her hair's different and her body, everything's different. And so that was super exciting to represent that person, you know, it was great. I loved it. And then the movie came out and it was huge and it was great for him and it was great for Oliver. And I still feel really lucky to have been a part of it.
Well, yeah. Well, it's a milestone for everyone involved. I got to interview Oliver and Tom and Ron Kovic.
Oh, wow.
Who Tom portrayed in the movie together. Yeah. And that was one of the most memorable days I've ever had.
I'll bet.
Sure.
An interviewer. Wow. But now on your resume, it says you directed Jane Fonda and Lily Tom.
Yes.
So.
No big deal, right?
I mean, that was the two of them.
It's fine.
That was my first TV directing job.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. I had done my movie. I got nominated for a DGA for my Lifetime movie. Which is like an oxymoron, like an award for a Lifetime movie. You know, it was shocking to me and everybody else, I think. and nominated with four men with very long resumes. And yeah, it was incredible. They are so lovely, so warm, so funny. Of course, I felt like I knew them, but I definitely did not know them.
Sure.
And but they were at a time, they're at a time in their life where they feel incredibly lucky to have the job. And right. I know what that feels like. And they really appreciated notes, honestly, and direction. Jane was like very specifically very open to direction and wanted thoughts and feedback, and Lily is amazing. And, you know, I'm a very exacting director. So like, I think I pushed her a little, she was like, oh Jesus Christ again, but so funny and so warm and so great. I mean, it was incredible. I mean, I pinched myself every second of that, you know, and it was such a funny, stylized, weird show. You know what I mean? The kind of thing that like, you know, you look at it and go, how is this working? But it totally works, you know. And they were all in the same movie, you know, as mm-hmm. Sidney Lumet always says, make sure you're all making the same movie. Like they were all making the same show. And,
yeah.
And Marta Kaufman is a genius. And, you know, it was amazing.
What wow. a cool thing. The actual definition of cool. What a cool thing to get to do. And
I knew
be
it
around.
Too. I knew it too. I knew it.
Yeah.
Now, did you get the job directing an episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine after you had been cast?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did a bunch of them. And then they asked me to do one more. And I said, how about you give me a directing slot and I do one more? And they were like, yes, which, you know,
wow.
It's a little manipulation on my part, but yeah. and it was, and they were great about it. They were like, absolutely. And I had a great time doing that. I had a great time acting in it. It was so fun to work opposite Andre Brower, who's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And it was fun because it was like I was the other side of the same coin. That's what I always thought about that character. Like Madeline Wunsch is just the same as him, but just the other side of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're mortal enemies, but totally turned on by each other, at least in my head. And it was really fun to direct it, too. I felt like very, obviously, I mean, it was the sixth season or something, and they knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't really need me, but I had a blast doing it. And like I said, I always do feel like I can put my particular stamp on every mm-hmm. episode that I do. And I really felt like I did with that. And I really enjoyed it. I mean, I definitely think it might. That was the first time that I felt the loneliness of being an actor being a director, because J.K. Simmons was in my episode, and at one point we were waiting for them to set up a shot, and I saw all the actors, like every one of the actors, including J.K. and Andy and Stephanie, and all the like having the best time in the other room, and I was like, I'd like to go hang out with the actors, and I was like, yeah, they don't want me hanging out with them. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that yeah. it is, it's different. You know, it's like, yeah. You're the person who gives them notes. You're the person who is critical. You're the person watching their half-baked work and going like, you know, so it's like, it's a lonelier job. Whereas mm-hmm. like as an actor, we're all for one for all, you know?
And interesting that you got to experience both sides of that on that show.
Yeah,
totally. And you know? Because I'd worked with JK before.
Of course.
Like, JK is going to really be happy to see me. And then when I mean, and I love him and he loves me. And
yeah.
But I remember the first time I walked over to him to give him a note, I saw a face on him that I'd never seen before. I guess he was like, kind of put his chest out and looked at me and put his neck back like, what the fuck do you want? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, whereas like as Kira and JK, as Brenda Lee Johnson, he's like, hey, you know, hi, hugs.
Right.
And, you know what I mean? So, I mean, I think actors know that directors need to tell them, give them notes, but they don't necessarily like it.
Yeah.
Well, that's my dad talks about that with being a film critic. It's nobody wants to hear they have an ugly baby.
Yes.
And it's why our whole life, people would say, you know, are you friends with you know, Scorsese, whatever, Spielberg. And he goes, no, you can't really be friends.
Yeah.
Because my job is to talk about what you do. Right. Now, thankfully, I think my dad does a really beautiful job of that. And he's always trying to be very positive and find the good. And that's why people like him, because he's not a Grinch. But still, you're talking about someone's baby.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing. So yeah. You know, when someone's acting, even if it's comedy, which is not for comedy now, but even if it's sillier, so you're not walking in and someone's just had to sob hysterically and, you know, whatever else, still, you're having to go over and say, your baby is so cute. But if you just...
Right, exactly.
It's hard.
Yeah.
Now, in your years on The Closer, how did you approach your position? I want to talk about clout. I want to talk about, you know, a power, and not just from a gender perspective, but the star of a TV show, where everything is really dependent on you.
Yep.
You're the locomotive of that show.
Yep.
And you know it, and they know it. Mm. And again, they respect you.
Yeah.
But you're an employee.
Right.
And there are a lot of people with notes to give there, and notes about career decisions and contract renewals and all of that kind of falderal that has to get involved. What are some of the lessons you learned along the way?
Don't be an asshole.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
excuse my language. I don't know if you can say that on this.
You're fine.
Yeah, don't be a creep. You know what I mean? Like, with power comes responsibility, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think that I was acutely aware of that. Mm-hmm. That I had a responsibility to be a decent human, to learn my lines, mm-hmm. to show up on time, to treat everyone else with respect. Because I knew that everyone's watching you to see how you're going to behave. Mm-hmm. And if you're behaving well, and if you raise the bar for everybody, everyone else is going to fall in line. So I think that's a great feeling, especially for me when I understand what power is, which is responsibility. Mm-hmm. I loved being able to set the tone for that show. It was very important to me. And I do think it made the show excellent. And I do think that, you know, yeah, it's true. When you've set a high bar for yourself, everybody notices and they try to reach you. Yes. As far as being an employee, you know, we made that network. I mean, you know, TNT didn't have anything going on, you know, and they really were good to us. And Steve Coonan was extraordinary to me, especially in terms of like the marketing. I mean, he was the Coke guy, you know, he was the head of Coca-Cola and the head of marketing, and he knew how to market things, you know. Mm-hmm. And he was the guy who put the Coca-Cola face on the moon or something like, or the Coca-Cola bottle on the moon. Or I don't know. It was like some weird stunt that he did that was like, oh my God. Now, I remember when our first year of The Closer, when we were debuting, they sat me down and showed me the whole marketing strategy. Huh. And I was like in total shock. First of all, I was grateful to be respected enough to be asked to that meeting. Like, I mean, that was like very seminal for me in that moment. And I wasn't a producer at the time because I didn't get that credit until later. And I just thought it was lovely, but also, you know, we work so hard on what we do. And, you know, if a tree falls in the forest, who cares, you know? Mm-hmm. And you know, Steve Coonan was hell-bent and determined to make sure that first year, I remember his stats were that every human being in the United States is going to see an ad for The Closer or some image at least six times before we air. I don't know how they got that whole, you know, stats, but I mean, I was on buses, I was in billboards, but more than that, I mean, they did things like they put like our name and the logo for the show on dry cleaning bags. I mean, genius, like dry cleaning bags, genius. And so, you know, I was without my kids. I was learning 46 pages of dialogue a week. And, you know, to see somebody respect my work, our work and my work specifically enough to give it like the biggest push that it could possibly have, that if we actually had a good product, people will see it and keep coming back. It was just, it was so incredible. And I felt lucky and appreciative. You know, I was 40. So I mean, I've always appreciated my career, but like, I knew that like this didn't happen all the time, you know?
Yeah.
It was great. It was just great. Hope that answers your question.
Of course it does. Look, being number one on the call sheet, it's
everything.
I mean, it's a lot.
It's a lot. And some people can't handle it at all.
No. And that's okay too. I mean, that's the thing. I understand everybody's different and how they handle things is different, but you have the wisdom to understand what it means. Yeah. And again, especially considering how many people will come through a show like that, where you have different, you know, each week is a crime or, you know, an event. So you're going to have people that we never see again.
Yes, exactly. And
so if they walk in, because how many people have you spoken to who have, you know, they were on one episode of Law and Order, they were on one episode of whatever it is, and they say, you know, Jerry Orbach couldn't have been kinder, or Sam Waters, you know, those people, oh, they were really professional and kind to me.
Yeah.
Huge. It's huge.
Yeah, it is.
You know?
It is.
And you don't know. You don't know what any of those people are going to go on to do.
Yeah.
And so your actions can have a really significant impact on how they behave.
That's right. And in the future, how they behave.
Yes.
Right. That's right.
Yep. Yeah, totally.
You're laying the groundwork.
If they have a show one day and they get to be number one, they can say, hey, I saw so-and-so and so-and-so, and this is how they did it. And I love that.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's the good part of aging.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, I mean, that's the whole thing is that I hate ageism so deeply. I hate it so much because I don't understand how being older and knowing more is a negative.
Yeah, right.
And for women and men getting older, you go, but that they're better. People just get better.
Yeah, totally.
You know? I mean, as you say, like Michael Caine is living his very best life right now.
Yeah.
You know, he is loving it. He just turned 90. I don't think he ever expected to make it to 90.
Right.
Like, you know, but drinking
chamomile tea.
Yeah, thank you.
Is that what he says?
Yes, no. Him and his wife, Shakira, you know, dear old Shakira. Right.
But, exactly.
But yeah, this is supposed to be when you are your best.
Yeah.
And so why would that not be great? And that is, I think, also obviously why Jane Fonda being the way she is and having the show and her and Lily Tomlin and them embracing that and it being so popular.
Yeah.
You know, you hope to God that somebody gets knocked on the head and you say, see, because it's good.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You just ticked another box off on your resume with this feature, Space Oddity.
Yeah.
It opens today as we're hosting this podcast.
Yeah.
And it's in select theaters and on video on demand. And is directed by our guest, Kira Sedgwick.
Mm-hmm.
And congratulations.
It's a big deal.
So nice.
Making a movie is a big deal. And making a movie that then actually gets to the world takes a hell of a lot of work.
Yes.
And a hell of a lot of people.
Yes.
You know, it's a big deal. It's a really big deal. So we congratulate you.
Thank you.
Also, how adorable are your daughter and husband in that car commercial? That's like the funniest thing I've ever seen. It's and I'll tell you, it's so my dad. And I think that's exactly what they're aiming for. My dad is so the one going, what's technology? If you guys know what I'm talking about, look up Kevin and Sosie Bacon.
Totally.
It is just adorable. It's a series of car ads and it's like the cutest thing you've ever seen and perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a good job. They really
did.
They had fun.
I mean, if they don't bring you in, it's a little rude, though.
Yeah, I know.
Like, at some point, you got to pop up.
I'm like waiting for the call.
That should be it, is they figure something out. And they go, did you know we could call mom?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I'm just saying, we should call somebody. Just putting it out there.
Exactly.
You know. Thank you so, so much for your time.
You.
It's a pleasure to speak to you.
Same here.
Talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye. Powerful women.
Yep.
and a woman who is grateful for the experiences that she's had.
Mm-hmm.
And
seems to have understood them as they were happening.
Yeah.
She's not somebody who sort of acquired wisdom all of a sudden overnight.
Yep.
When she turned 50.
Yeah.
She sounds to me, or seems to me, like a person who's got a good head on her shoulders.
She does.
And has had all from the beginning.
She does. And as I say, it's when we talk about being number one in the culture, which is something we bring up to some people, you know, this is true again in any business. Everything stems from the boss, right? You know,
a fish stinks from the head down.
That's
as
it.
They say.
You know, if you're in an office and the boss is a nice person, that affects everything. And it doesn't change, you know, whatever the job is. It's a big deal. And it means a lot. As I say, it means a lot to the people working when they're treated a certain way. And it means a lot, you know, when you're doing something like this, because then hopefully that is how people understand they need to behave. And then they take that with them.
Yep.
Again, you hope. You hope that, you know, their kindness.
We've seen both ways. We've seen it cut both ways.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Be nice.
Be nice.
Oh, it's just better, isn't it? It's just better. Very grateful to her for her time and so pleased for her that she has this new movie. And as always, grateful to you guys for joining us. We really, really appreciate you giving us your time.
And we will see you next week. And until then, you can find us where?
All of the things. I am at Jesse Malton. You are at Leonard Malton on Instagram and Twitter. You're also on Facebook. We have a YouTube channel, Malton on Movies. We do live streams there. You have leonardmalton.com, movie reviews, book roundups, all kinds of good stuff. And of course, the Patreon.
Patreon.com.
Which I lovingly call Maltreon.
Patreon.com/Malton on Movies, where if you want to help support what we do and help us to continue doing it, you can do so, and we can thank you in various ways.
We appreciate it so much.
Yep.
Everybody take care, and we'll see you next time.
Ta-ta for now.
Today's episode of Malton on Movies is brought to you by Legion M, the world's first fan-owned entertainment company. If you love movies as much as we do, why not own a piece of them? Find out more at www.legionm.com.